morning and welcome to Under the Olive Tree. You are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. I'm Laith Marouf, your host. Today is March the 16th, 2006. The hour is 11 and I will be with you till noon as usual. Under the Olive Tree is not just a Palestinian community radio show. We have two reasons for our existence. The first is to provide the space, the equipment and the know-how of radio production to Palestinian youth, in order for them to reach our second goal, to produce a content that truly represents the Palestinian community. If you'd like to join our production team or you have any questions, please send us an email, uot@ckut.ca. Our address is uot@ckut.ca, or give us a call at area code 514-398-6788. We're going to start the show this week on an issue of Canada's vote last week in the United Nations against the Palestinian right of return. Canada, for the first time in history, have joined the shameful United States government, the only government that votes every year against the inalienable Palestinian right to return to their homes that they were expelled from or left because of fear. There is a statement that is circulating now on the internet between different Palestinian human rights organizations across the globe to condemn this vote, and I will read this statement for you, started by Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, and now is being signed by many, many other organizations. It is with great dismay that we write this statement condemning Canada's dishonorable vote last week at the United Nations. Mr. Harper's government has voted against the inalienable right of Palestinian refugees to return to their homes. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights of 1948, Article 13.2 reads, "Everyone has the right to leave any country, including his own, and to return to his country." To state that this right is not applicable to Palestinians, as Foreign Affairs Minister Peter McKay did by approving this vote, creates the impression that the conservative government believes Palestinians are less than human. What appalls us the most is the fact that we just celebrated the 57-year anniversary of the International Declaration of Human Rights, created after the tragedies of the Nazi Shoah. At that time, there were Jewish refugees knocking on the doors of Canada, and we remember the cries of "None is too many" from Mackenzie King's civil servant Charles Frederick Blair. By voting against the right of return for Palestinians, the Harper government implicitly sends the message, "None is too many" for Palestinians returning home. We reiterate that we condemn with the harshest words the outright racism embodied in this vote. We are concerned that this sentiment is now pervading the Harper government's policies concerning the Palestinian people and their rights. It is with great alarm that we call upon all sectors of civil society in Canada to mobilize against what we believe is an attack not only on Palestinian rights, but the essence of universal values embodied in the International Declaration of Human Rights, which was tragically won at the cost of tens of millions of lives in World War II. This statement is being circulated between Palestinian human rights organizations in North America. For more information or to contact the originators of this statement, please email info@sphr.org. Again, the email is info@sphr.org. On today's show, we will be listening to a lecture given by Gideon Levy, Israeli-renowned journalist from Haaretz Daily. He was on a national tour with the Human Rights Media Institute and Solidarity for Palestinian Human Rights, where he spoke at six different universities in Nova Scotia, Quebec, and Ontario. We have a recording from Ryerson University, where Gideon Levy spoke in Toronto. But before we listen to this lecture, we're going to listen to a beautiful song by world-renowned Lebanese singer Fayrouz, who sang a song around 31 years ago called Shadi. And this song is about the situation of children under bombardments of the Israeli army and the civil war and the death of children.
من زمان أنا الأحراس العب أنا وياه كان اسمه شادي أنا وشادي غنينا سوا لعبنا على التلج ركضنا بالهوى كتبنا على حجار قصص الصغار ولوحنا الهوى ويوم من الأيام ولعت الدنيا ناس ضد ناس علقوا بهالدنيا وصار القتال يقرب عطلال علقت عطرة في الوادي شادي ركض يتفرج خفت وصرت اندهله وينك رايح يا شادي اندهله ما يسمعني ويبعد يبعد بالوادي ومن يومتها ما عدت شفته ضاع عشرين مرة إجا وراح التلج وأنا صرت أكبر وشادي بعده صغير عم يلعب عالتلج عالتلج.
That was Feroz singing Shadi about the situation of children in war in 1970s when the Israeli invasions and the war of 1973 were happening and so forth. We will move on now and listen to Gideon Levy, Israeli renowned journalist from Haaretz Daily, speaking on the situation in the occupied territories. He was touring Canada in six universities.
So our special guest this evening is Mr. Gideon Levy, who was a well-known Israeli journalist writing for Haaretz, the leading newspaper in Israel. His articles have shed a critical light on Israeli policy and have helped to highlight the suffering of the Palestinian people. Mr. Levy's visit to Ryerson is part of a pan-Canadian speaking tour, and his visit here tonight is his only stop in Toronto. So please join with me in giving a warm Ryerson welcome to Mr. Gideon Levy.
After this very warm introduction, I can only disappoint you, so maybe I should shut up and that's it and go home. It should be rather bizarre that the first event of a solidarity movement with the Palestinians is being held with a guest speaker who is a Jew, an Israeli, and a writer in a quite... Central Israeli newspaper. And I find it remarkable, and I find it even encouraging. But this will be my last encouraging sentence in this lecture, I'm afraid. All the rest will be much more pessimistic, unfortunately. Let me tell you a little bit about myself, just to put things in context. I was born in Tel Aviv, I was raised in Tel Aviv, I was what we call Yele Tov Tel Aviv, a good boy from Tel Aviv, who went to school, who was in university, who even worked with Shimon Peres for 4 years, who worked in the army radio station, and was a typical Israeli with a typical point of view, a product of the Israeli education system, knowing few things and ignoring few things, being sure that the Israelis are the one and only victims in the Middle East, being sure that the Israelis are always right and the Palestinians are always wrong, being sure that there is only one justice around, and this is the Jewish justice, being sure that this regional superpower, Israel, who belongs any kind of weapon in the world, is in an existentialistic danger, can be attacked any day, and can come to its end any day, being sure that all what the Arabs want is just to kick us to the sea, to the ocean, not asking too many questions, not knowing what are those ruins around our cities and towns, very few ruins, who was living there before, what happened there before, being really sure that the land without the people arrived, arrived to a land without the people, a typical Israeli. And then something happened to me which unfortunately happened to very few Israelis. I start going to the West Bank and to Gaza, which most of my fellow Israelis do not do. And I start with my journalistic modest mission that I took upon myself to try to tell the Israelis what they don't know, what they do not wish to know, what most of the media does not want them to know, what the government doesn't want them to know. A very strange, peculiar coalition from wall to wall in Israel, not wanting to know, not wanting to tell them. And I'm doing this mission now for over almost 20 years with one modest goal in my mind, really to prevent the situation that Israelis will be able to say, or at least the readers of Haaretz will be able to say, we didn't know. Because I'm really sure that this day that Israelis will start asking themselves, or will be asked by their sons, or maybe by their grandsons, where were you in those terrible times? What have you been doing when all this terrible tragedy took place half an hour away from your homes, 15 minutes away from your homes, 45 minutes from your homes? Where were you? What was your role? What was your responsibility? And I just, and that's my only goal in my journalistic mission, at least that a few of them will not have this privilege to say, no, we didn't know. We didn't know that all this is taking place on our behalf, day after day, hour after hour. And most of them still don't know and don't want to know, because Israel, unfortunately, in the last 5 years had got into a situation of coma. The Israeli society is really in coma. A wave of apathy, indifference. Most of you are very young, you don't have children yet. I can tell you that if your baby is crying, you don't have to worry usually. You have to rush to the emergency room if your baby becomes apathetic, if it should just start to stare and not to react, then there is a reason for worry. And I truly believe that the Israeli society is today in this stage, that maybe only an emergency room will help it, of apathy to any kind of agony. First it was of the agony of the other, now it starts even to be our own. Everyone for himself. Restaurants in Tel Aviv are packed up 24 hours a day. The rich one are becoming richer, the poor one are becoming poorer. Life in Tel Aviv is as hectic as it's never been. You come at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning to a restaurant, the waiter will ask you, did you reserve a table? And if not, you might not find a place. and 15 minutes away from there, half an hour away from there, there is a people whose destiny is, with all the modesty I would like to say even to you, and I say to my fellow Israelis, none of you can imagine yourself. None of you who have never been there, never lived there, including me, can imagine himself what does it mean today to be an ordinary Palestinian under the occupation on a daily basis. And I'm not speaking about the killings, and I'm not speaking about the house demolishing, and I'm not speaking about the uprooting the trees. I'm speaking about daily life. A young Palestinian your age, if you meet him, nothing but nothing in his life can be compared to your life or to my life. Nothing. He wakes up in the morning, he is not sure he will be able to get out of his home. Will he be able to get out of his home? He for sure cannot know. Would he be able to get to school, to friends, to anywhere? One thing he can be sure on a daily basis, that in some point he will be humiliated in a very brutal way, on a daily basis. Someone will treat him like an animal. Today and tomorrow and yesterday. Someone will humiliate his parents in front of him. Someone will humiliate his children in front of him. And he will be totally helpless. I think the Israeli occupation had reached a stage of brutality and cruelty like never before. And you know, last year was a very unique date, 2005. The occupation had celebrated 38 years of existence, which means double the time that Israel existed without the occupation. 19 years without the occupation, between 48 and 67, 38 years with the occupation until last year. Nobody can claim anymore that we are dealing with a temporary phenomena, that we are dealing with something that is just about to be ended. Nobody even can claim, like our leaders claimed in the first years, that we just keep those territories as cards for the negotiation. As there is also no negotiation, anyhow, you don't hold cards for 38 years under such inhuman conditions. And I want really to emphasize the daily humiliation of the occupation as the worst, more than anything else. Because I truly believe that the killings and the demolishing are horrible. And I'm the first one to admit it, because that's what I'm doing most of the time, documenting those aspects. Because humiliating do not make a story. It doesn't make a story. It's not dramatic. You can't deliver it to your readers. It is so routine and so daily that it doesn't make a story, as we say. But this is the worst of it. And many times I keep asking myself, how come? How come that young Israelis, who are the sons of my friends and the friends of my sons and the sons of my neighbors, part of them being brought up with values, they would go and volunteer if there will be an earthquake in Turkey and rescue people there. They will go to Mexico for another earthquake. They would help an old lady to cross the road even if she doesn't want to cross the road. What happens to them when they cross the green line? when they serve the army, that they are becoming what they are becoming. And what is worse than this, how come they never ask themselves the questions? How come that 5 years later they don't ask any questions? Who are we? Who gave us the moral right to do those things? Only because we are strong? Only because we have all the weapons in the world, we have the right to dominate in such a brutal way another people? Who gave us this right? Washington? Is it enough? And I kept on asking myself, what is happening to those young people, because I know them, I appear in front of them in lectures in the army. They are not monsters, at least part of them, believe me. They are always the sadists and the really terrible people, but the majority, they are not monsters. When you meet them, they will be very nice. And then share some human values. And for years I was asking myself, what really makes them be so different when they are there? And for years I thought it only, the general excuse is they are afraid. As we are always the victim, so we are always also afraid. And it's quite frightening to serve there. But that's not the full picture, it's ridiculous. And then it happened to me once in the checkpoint of Calandia, which is not the worst checkpoint of the checkpoints. Today they built it and it looks like an international border between Switzerland and France, with the small difference that nobody is passing there because nobody has the right to pass there. But until a few months ago, Calandia was a huge checkpoint cutting Ramallah from Jerusalem. Even not a checkpoint before Jerusalem, because there is another checkpoint between Ramallah and Jerusalem. Just one of those tens and tens of checkpoints around the West Bank. On a road of 5 miles or 7 kilometers between Nablus and the junction, southern Nablus, I counted once 4 checkpoints. In each checkpoint, you spend between 2 to 3 hours, not to speak about the humiliation. But I was standing once in this Calandia checkpoint, and all of a sudden I understood, what is it all about? Because I looked around, I didn't look at the soldiers, I didn't look at the Palestinians, I looked at the environment. Dust, mud, no water, no roof, nothing. For people who stay there hours and hours, sick people and old people and ill people and babies and everything you can imagine yourself, and pregnant women. And all of a sudden I understood the whole story. I think that generation after generation, we are educating our young people that the Palestinians are not human beings like us. They are something else. I don't want to say animals, because once I wrote it and then I got all kind of letters from organizations of animals' rights, that they also deserve some rights, which is true. But when I saw this Calandia place, I understood that it's not by without any reason that it all looks like a place where you deliver animals or cows or whatever from one side to the other, without any single human sign, anything which will look like a place that human beings are crossing or being prevented of crossing. And then I understood that this dehumanization of the Palestinians is the condition for the maintenance of this brutal occupation for so many years. Because those young people are sure that they are not dealing with human beings like them. And if so, there are no moral questions. And there are no questions about them being human or not human. Because they deal with something else.
That was Gideon Levy, Israeli renowned journalist from Haaretz, speaking on the situation in Palestine, Israel. We will interrupt the speech for one song. The song is by Ahmed Kelani and is a beautiful song, a funny love song actually, that is titled Ya Umm al-Kufiya, O You Woman with a Kufiya.
هلا يا من الكوفية لا تكبر علي بكرة الهوى برمي وأضمك بيدي بكرة الهوى برمي وأضمك بيدي هلا يا من الكوفية لا تكبر علي هلا يا من الكوفية لا تكبر علي بكرة الهوى برمي وأضمك بيدي بكرة الهوى برمي وأضمك بيدي والله والخاطر مايل هلا يم الجدايل والخاطر مايل يا ست الأصايل نسبة فلسطينية يا ست الأصايل نسبة فلسطينية هلا يم الكوفية لا تكبر علي هلا يم الكوفية لا تكبر علي بكرة الهوى هلا يم الخلخالة طيب قدام ببالي هلا يم الخلخالة طيب قدام ببالي وصرتي حلالي حبك بي عيني وصرتي حلالي حبك بي عيني هلا يم الكوفية لا تكبر علي هلا يم الكوفية لا تكبر علي بكرة الهوى مرمي وصرتك بيدي بكرة الهوى مرمي وصرتك بيدي هلا غير الكحلة حبك أحلى وأحلى هلا يا مغير الكحلة حبك أحلى وأحلى أنا وياك برحلة بالكورة الأرضية أنا وياك برحلة بالكورة الأرضية هلا يا من الكوفية لا تكبر علي هلا يا من الكوفية لا تكبر علي بكرة الهوى بيرمي هلا يا من الجديلة والقامة الطويلة هلا يا من الجديلة والقامة الطويلة يا مهرة أصيلة شجرة نعناقية يا مهرة أصيلة شجرة نعناقية هلا يا من الكوفية لا تكبر
Kehlani performing a song titled Ya Umm Al-Kufiya, O Woman with a Kufiya. Beautiful love song, beautiful, funny love song. We will return to Gideon Levy's lecture in Ryerson University. Gideon Levy, as we said before, is a renowned Israeli journalist from Haaretz Daily.
I remember once when I was sitting in the checkpoint of Jenin, on the way out of Jenin, and there was an ambulance standing in front of me, a Palestinian ambulance with red lights on. And I was standing behind the ambulance with my bulletproof car. I was shot once by the Israeli army, but not that they knew that I was inside. Maybe if they would have known, they would have targeted me more, but they didn't know. Anyhow, I was standing behind this ambulance, Palestinian ambulance, 15 minutes, half an hour, 45 minutes. We are used to standing checkpoints, but after 1 hour, really, I really freaked out. The soldiers were playing Sheshesh, Begamon, in their position. It was in times that nobody was allowed to get out of Jenin, so there was no traffic at all, only me and the ambulance. And when I freaked out, they went out to the soldiers, and beside other things that I was telling them, I asked them, what would have happened if your father would have been in this ambulance now? What memory would have you carried to the rest of your life if your son would have been in this ambulance, if your wife would have been in your ambulance, if your grandmother would have been in this ambulance? They didn't even know who is in the ambulance and in which condition. It's not that they came and checked. They didn't bother to go at all to see what's going on. And they freaked out and they directed the weapon toward me. Because this question is really freaking out. When you come and ask them to put themselves for a moment instead of the Palestinian who is standing in front of them, they prevent themselves from doing so because they really think he is not like them. Once, many years ago, I had the TV show and they asked Ehud Barak, before he became Prime Minister, the question that I would like to ask any of my fellow Israelis. I asked Ehud Barak, what would have happened if you would have been Palestinian? If you would have been born Palestinian, what would you have been? And Ehud Barak gave me the only honest answer he could give. And I appreciate him for this. He said, I would have joined a terror organization, a terror group. Because what would exactly would have he done? Become a collaborator with Israel? Become a pianist? He's a warrior, he's a fighter. And he gave the only honest question, an answer that somebody can give. And then the Likud made a fuss out of this question, and in the campaign they used him against him, but this doesn't matter. What matters is that we have to ask ourselves this question. We have also to ask ourselves, what is the real infrastructure of terror? You know, we have all those wonderful, worldwide, famous intelligence services, the Shabak and the Mossad, and they have all those electronic devices and thousands of Palestinian collaborators who are blackmailed on terrible grounds, on terrible conditions. And many times they throw them after using them. And they give you always the name of each commander in each militant group. And then they assassinate him, and you know, the Hamas is an organization, and the Islamic Jihad, all your very senior ones. You never hear that they killed someone who is not senior in the Hamas. And they know everything, and they can know what is the color of the underwear of every one of those activists. But they don't see the real infrastructure of terror, with all the reports and think tanks. Because I truly believe that the real infrastructure of terror is the occupation. I sincerely believe the Palestinian people is one of the most tolerant peoples on earth. When they bear and tolerate what we are doing to them for so many years, part of them refugees, second time and third time in their lifetime, losing 2 and 3 homes. Many times I ask myself, how come terror is so limited vis-à-vis what we are doing to them? And I really think we should ask ourselves also about the Palestinian terror. Why? Why does a guy of Nablus go and explode himself in order to kill innocent civilians in Tel Aviv? He has a reason. And those of us who immediately combine this refugee from Balata, a refugee camp, immediately to a world connection of terror and Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden, are making their lives too easy. Because the Palestinian terror basically is a local terror, and the terror is the weapon of the weak one. And I can assure you that any suicide bomber would rather sit in an F-16 jet and push the button rather than go and explode himself in the streets of Tel Aviv. And I'm not justifying what he's doing, because any kind of violence is not justified in my eyes. But I can understand his motivation. There was this wonderful documentary that unfortunately very few in Canada saw, about the Jenin refugee camp. Anna's children, the children of Anna. Wonderful movie by Giuliano Mayer. And those of you who saw it, I'm sure will share it with me. This unforgettable picture of the small child Allah sitting among the ruins of his home. He should be at this time 5 or 6 or 7, I don't know. This picture of Allah sitting a few minutes after the house was demolished. His face told everything. He doesn't cry, he doesn't bleed. He just looked in a horrified look, looking to the right, looking to the left, looking for some kind of help, looking for somebody to rescue him on the ruins of his home. And I doubt it very much if any one of us can imagine himself, what does it mean to see your home being demolished in front of your eyes with everything inside it. For sure no Israeli can imagine himself the real meaning of it, because it's not only walls that are destroyed. And this child Allah grew up, and what did he become? He became the commander of the Al-Aqsa Brigades in Jenin. What did we expect him to become? A member of the Zionistic movement? Always those talking about incitement. Palestinians do not need to be incited. It's enough to see what's happening in front of their homes to hate us. And this Allah, whom I happen to know when he became the commander of the Al-Aqsa Brigades, finished his life 1 or 2 years later when he was assassinated somewhere around the year of 2002. And every time that I think about those questions, I remember this Allah who was not born to kill, I can assure you, who would rather have another life and another fate, and was pushed, just pushed, by the occupation to become what he became. And maybe he became a terrorist, and maybe he had launched some terror actions in Tel Aviv, in Jerusalem, or elsewhere. But where did it all start? What would any one of us carry with him if our house would have been demolished in a brutal way, many times without any reasons in the world? And what do Israelis know about it? They just hear, in the best case, they hear that another house from an ultra-terrorist was demolished today. And this is one of the means in fighting terror. None of us is asking himself how many new terrorists are born among those ruins. None of us has the slightest idea what does it mean to see your mother being carried on the ground, your father being chained, and your house being demolished in front of your house, and to see your parents totally helpless, humiliated on the ground. And who is doing it? Me? Any one of us Israelis? It is not Sharon. It is not just the IDF, the Israeli army. Each of us Israelis carrying this moral responsibility, if we want it or not. Or as I phrased it once, every one of us is a checkpoint soldier. And if we are not aware to it now, we will be able to do it one day. Because I'm sure that one day, as I said before, those questions will come to the surface. Those questions will prevent from at least few of us to sleep at night, knowing what we were doing for those years. There is already one group, small but brave, named Breaking Silence, of soldiers who come back and start to tell what they really have been doing in their military service. Unfortunately, when a society is in conditions of coma, their voice doesn't have the right echo, because those are soldiers, not traitors like me. Those are soldiers who just came back from their military service, telling horrifying stories. Now the question is, where do we go to from here? We, the Palestinians, Israel, which, as you all know, is considered to be the only democracy in the Middle East. But there is one unfortunate thing about this democracy. Like, it is unfortunate not to be able to be half pregnant. Maybe many times you would like to be half pregnant, but it doesn't work. Either you are pregnant or you are not. Same for being democratic. Either you are a democracy or you are not. You can't be half pregnant, you can't be half democratic. You can't be democracy only to a certain geographic line and claim whatever is after this line, we have the right not to be democratic. It is part and partial of you, and the occupation is part and partial of the state of Israel. So this claim that Israel is a democracy sounds, I think, today, after 38 years of occupation, really like a ridiculous claim that no one can take it anymore seriously.
يا يما حس الفرح في داري لإخوالي يما رماني الهوى وغير لي أحوالي ظلت أدور على الإجواد تلاقيهم يما رماني الهوى جوا على ليهم
وابنيها يا بنا والفرح اللي
إلنا والعرسان تتهنى
والفرح إلنا
والعرسان تتهنى
والدار داري والبيوت بيوتي وحنا خاطبنا
يا عدو موتي
وحنا خاطبنا
يا عدو موتي
يا بي مريم لا تكن عبوسي واسمح بوجهك
واعطيها العروسي
واسمح بوجهك
واعطيها العروسي
يا بي مريم لا تكن طماعي والمال يفنى
والناس ابن الساعي والمال يفنى والناس ابن الساعي والمال يفنى والناس ابن الساعي والمال يفنى والناس ابن الساعي.
That was Gideon Levy, the renowned Israeli journalist, speaking on the situation in Palestine, Israel. The lecture was given in Ryerson University last week, and it was followed by a song from Al-Funun Folkloric Palestinian Band. They were singing a love song. Thank you for being with us this week. Again, my name is Laith Maruf. If you'd like to join our team of production on Under the Olive Tree, or you have any questions, please email us at uot@ckut.ca, uot@ckut.ca, or give us a call at 514-398-6788. Again, that's 514-398-6788. Until we meet Under the Olive Tree next week, I wish you all a free, free Palestine.